Before we take up today's agenda, Gene Martin has asked for a moment to make an introduction. Gene.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce Denise Desautel. If you could stand up. Denise is just newly hired as our Deputy Regional General Counsel in Gloucester. Denise comes from Department of Homeland Security, Coast Guard, where she was a lawyer before coming up here. She's a native of Massachusetts and is back in her home state, and we're very glad to have her on board. Denise will be helping me out, sharing some responsibilities dealing with New England Fishery Management Council issues, including perhaps taking over a couple of FMPs. We're still working through in our office what aspects of the New England Council Denise might be addressing. So I would like you to, when you see her, give her a welcome to our nice little friendly New England Council. Thank you.
Okay, the first agenda item is the Groundfish Committee report behind tab 3. I'll turn it over to Chairman Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As John said, the discussion materials are behind tab number 3. For today's discussion, we are focusing solely on the haddock bycatch cap framework, which is now framework 46. It was previously referred to as framework 47, but since we propose to initiate the framework today, it puts it ahead of the ACL setting frameworks that will come later in the year. The pertinent documents for today's discussion are documents number 1, document 2, and handed out today the Groundfish Committee meeting report, document number 11. The PDT has held one conference call and one meeting with this as a lot of the discussion. The Groundfish Committee met last week and also discussed this as well as other items that we will discuss during the regular report on tomorrow morning. The process today will be that Tom will give one of his usual tub thumper presentations, and after that I will offer some motions for the discussion on this bycatch framework. So I'll turn it over to Tom.
Good morning. I'm going to give a short presentation which summarizes information that was presented to the Groundfish Committee. Most of that information was based on two PDT discussions, one a conference call that was held in December and then a subsequent meeting that was held in January. The PDT report from the January meeting is item number 2 in your binder if you want to refer to anything in it. I'm going to only highlight the main points and not go into as much detail as I gave at the committee meeting, so those of you who were at the committee meeting don't get too comfortable because it's not going to last too long. The to summarize where we are at the November Council meeting during the priorities discussion, the Council passed a motion that said to create Framework 47. As Rip said, we're now calling this Framework 46 to address issues associated with a haddock bycatch cap in the sea herring fishery for implementation in 2011. This morning I'm going to give a very brief overview of the existing regulations. I think many of you are either on the Groundfish Committee or the Herring Committee, so many of you are probably familiar with them. Give you a sample of the data that's contained in the PDT report, though I'm not going to go over all the data. I will review the objectives that the committee adopted for the framework at the committee meeting that they're recommending to the Council today, and I'll go over briefly the committee options. As I mentioned, there's additional detail in the PDT report. If anybody wants to get into it, we can, but this is what's planned for the presentation. The current regulations were adopted in Framework Adjustment 43. At the time, before they were adopted, herring vessels were considered exempted gear, and were prohibited from possessing ground fish. There was an incident where they caught haddock on George's Bank, and this essentially meant that they weren't going to be able to fish on George's Bank. So Framework 43 redefined them as an exempted fishery, no longer as an exempted gear, and established a haddock bycatch cap. And I think it's important to note that in the framework explicitly was designed to create a regulatory mechanism which would allow midwater trawl fishery to target herring on George's Bank. That's explicitly defined in the purpose and need of the framework, which is quoted in the groundfish PDT report, if you want to refer to it. So in anticipation of the framework that we're working on now, the PDT examined these data. And I'd like to talk first about the very first bullet. If you're familiar with the way the bycatch cap is handled as a result of Framework 43, it's a cap amount is established, and catches of haddock on certain boats, certain herring boats, meaning only boats with a Category A and B permit, are counted against that cap. And to be very clear, it's catches that are basically seen that are counted against the cap. There's, I think, three sources that are used, observer data, enforcement reports, and dealer data that are used to monitor the bycatch cap. And what this means is that there's no attempt made at present to expand from the observed information to an estimate of the total catch by the fishery. This was in part because back when this framework was adopted, the Science Center advised the council that they didn't think that the observer coverage or sampling procedures were adequate at the time to develop a robust estimate of the catches of haddock in the herring fishery. The center has essentially changed their mind on that, and they believe that they can now estimate total catches of haddock in the herring fishery. So I'm going to present some data on that. I'm not going to present all of these items today. They're all in the PDT report. I'm basically going to give you information on the estimate of the total catches and the spatial and temporal distribution. I'm not going to talk about the middle three. The data on the middle three, as I mentioned, is in the PDT report. So center scientists developed estimates of the catch of herring in the haddock fishery. Catch of haddock in the herring fishery. When they did it, they initially looked at both purse seine and midwater trawls. The amount caught by the purse seine fleet was very minor, on the order of 3 to 5 metric tons or less. So most of the information I'm going to present here is going to focus on the midwater trawl fleet. They basically used analytic techniques that are very similar to what they use for the SBRM to estimate discards, but instead of estimating discarded catch, they estimated total catch of haddock by the midwater trawl fleet. The PDT report has the breakdown in a number of different ways. It goes into the details of how this thing was calculated, which I'm not going to go into. I'm going to focus on one of the tables in the PDT report, which is this one here, which shows the midwater trawl haddock catch estimates on George's Bank since 2003. When you look in the tables in the PDT report, you see that you get a lot of blank lines before about 2001 because of a lack of observer coverage. I'd also point out that some of these early years are years when the center in the past was not very confident about the estimates. So the advice of the PDT here is really focus at the last 3 or 4 years here that are on this chart. And what you can see is that, and this is the characterization in the PDT report, is that these estimates are moderately to poorly estimated. And what that means is if you look on the right-hand column, you see some CV numbers, coefficient of variation, and you can see that in the case of 2006, when we only had 4 observed trips, the CV was pretty high. It was 0.99. In 2009, when we had a lot of observed trips, it was 0.30. Okay, which is much lower. I'm not really going to get into how to interpret a CV except to say lower is better. That's probably the easiest way to remember it. The other thing you'll notice is that it shouldn't really be a surprise that the more observed trips, to be more accurate, the higher percentage of trips that are observed, the lower your CVs tend to be. This is generally true in all of these sampling protocols. So these are the numbers. You can see that with the exception of 2006, when there's only 4 observed trips, generally the numbers are in the ballpark of 0 to 100 metric tons. You know, they're in that order of magnitude. So what does that mean in terms of haddock fishery? PDT report has a couple of charts which try and put these catches into some kind of context. This is probably the simplified version. You see the estimated windwater trawl catch on the left-hand column next to the year. You see what that percent was as the percent of U.S. catch, and then you see what it is as the percent of the target tack, which was before 2009, or the ACL. In the future, these will be called ACLs. And you can see that in 2006, and this is once again is the very uncertain estimate, it was up at 7%. But as a percentage of the target tack or ACL, all of these numbers are below 1%. And then on the right-hand column, you can see what the U.S. catch was as a percent of the target tack or ACL. And you can see that in the most recent years, we've been catching generally less than 10% of the Georges Bank haddock target tack in this case. Back in 2004 and 2005, we were catching roughly 60% of it. But the point here is we're not catching all of it. These low numbers at the bottom are, of course, due to the large size of the 2003 year class as it's finally eligible to the fishery. We have large tacks, and we're not catching all of it. Now, the PDT was fortunate to get some assistance from Dr. Jamie Kernane, who has been helping the herring PDT address river herring issues. And she did a similar analysis for us with the catches of haddock in the herring fishery. And unlike the table I showed you before, Jamie looked at catches by all gears. So I'm only showing part of this, but just keep that in mind when I refer to Jamie's work. And the important thing here to note is we've attached a paper that she wrote for us to the back of the PDT report, and she includes a number of tables where she looked at information on the occurrences of haddock in the herring fishery by tow, by gear. And she broke it down by two-month periods at the PDT's request. And what we're showing here is only two of them, because generally what happens is that most of the months look like the March and April block, where you have a lot of observed tows by the midwater trawl fleet. In this case, that's the middle column, PR for pair trawl. You have a lot of tows where you don't see any haddock in the observed tow. And then you have a few tows where you see some. And by some, we can argue what the amounts are, but over the course of the five-year period and the year-long, they range from 0 to 21,000 pounds in a tow. The largest over the period is 21,000 pounds. So you can see that there's, you know, generally most of the months look like this March and April chart. The exception is September and October, and to a little lesser extent, July and August, where what you see is, I think, roughly 30% of the tows in September and October encounter haddock, and about 60 to 66% don't. July and August, it's not quite as high, but it is higher than the other months of the year. So one of the next things Jamie did, and these are easier to read in the PDT report, but I'm not going to go through all six of them. She took and she mapped herring fishing activity based on the VTR reports by statistical area, and she colored the statistical area blocks brighter colored, hotter colors or warmer colors based on how much activity was there. And then she overlaid on top of that, which is difficult to see on the screen but easy to see in the report, she put on the actual observed catches of haddock. So what you can see here is the way the herring fishery tends to progress is that, too many gadgets. The way it tends to progress is in January and February, it tends to be down off the coast of Long Island. As the year goes on, it starts to move up the coast. When you get to July and August, you start to see more activity out on Georges Bank, particularly the northern side there of Georges Bank. September, October, you see this big red blotch in the east shore Gulf of Maine and on Georges Bank. And then in the end of the year, it starts to move back south again. difficult to see on the screen because of the distance, but if you look carefully, you can see that the red doesn't look quite so solid here in September and October, and that's because there's a lot of instances of catching haddock by the midwater trawl fleet here on George's Bank, and that's what these are. And to summarize all of them on one page and to focus in so you can see a little bit better what they look like, this is the annual summary. And while most of these here are midwater trawl fleet, I have to remind you that Jamie looked at all gear, and so some of these in the other areas could very well be small catches by other gear. But generally speaking, almost all of these on this picture are catches of haddock by the midwater trawl fleet. And you can see that they're, as I said, they tend to be concentrated along here. They tend to be concentrated in September and October, to some extent in July and August. That's probably a combination both of where the herring fishery takes place as well as where the haddock are. But you can also see that there is considerable observed herring activity up in some of these other areas in the Gulf of Maine that takes place over the course of the year where they're not catching haddock. And if you look at the two-month plots on the table, you'll see some of these similar things. You'll see a lot of these, they look like black dots here, which are observed tows that didn't catch any haddock. Kind of highlight this. This is a plot that was done by the PDT where we're looking just at midwater trawls. Our circles are scaled differently, so they don't match up identically with the work I showed before, but it's basically the same observer information. On the left, you can see these are midwater trawl tows that caught herring, and the size of the circle is related to the size, how much herring was caught by tow. On the right is midwater trawl tows that caught haddock. And once again, I think it's pretty easy to see that there is a lot of midwater trawl activity that takes place, that has taken place up in the Gulf of Maine in particular, that's not really catching haddock. And that the places where they tend to catch haddock tend to be along this side of the Cape here, but even more importantly out here in Herring Management Area 3 on George's Bank. So these data and the other pieces of data that the PDT looked at led to some general conclusions from the PDT. One is that most of the haddocks being caught, the overwhelming majority of the haddock caught in herring fishery is being caught by midwater trawl gear. So it's at least theoretically possible you could narrow the applicability of the cap to midwater trawl gear. Most of it seems to be caught out in Herring Management Area 3 or on George's Bank. The two don't quite overlap, but generally, if you look at Herring Area Management Area 3, that's where most of the catches take place. Not really covered in my presentation, but in the PDT report, we examined to see, you know, are there some correlations and the relationships between the bycatch and haddock stock size or herring catches or things like that, to try and see if there was some way that we could possibly predict future catches. We don't really think so at present. Perhaps when we get a few more years of good data and good observer coverage, then we might be able to, but at present we don't think we're really able to. The catches are generally small compared to the available or total George's Bank haddock catch. We think it's unlikely that there's substantial biological risk. We use the qualifier unlikely because it's at least theoretically possible that if they catch a lot of small fish, that we would have to take a closer look at that. In any case, in the framework document, we will take a closer look at that and see what the implications are of catching a lot of small fish. We did look at length frequency analyses. They're in the PDT report, and it's not entirely clear that except for the unusual 2003 year class, it's not exactly clear that they are catching a lot of small, very small haddock routinely. I would like at this point, before talking about the framework objectives, is just to point out that when I mentioned that the Science Center thinks that they can estimate the haddock catches by the midwater trawl fishery at present, that they did put some qualifiers on that. And one of the important qualifiers is that's subject to having adequate observer coverage. You know, so conceivably, if observer coverage falls below some level, you're not going to be able to provide realistic estimates. What's adequate? We haven't really examined that yet. We do have the ability to tell you through the SBRM approach, you know, what the number of trips is needed for a certain CV, at least theoretically. You can see that four trips gives you very high CVs, and a greater number of trips gives you a better CV. So the PDT, I'm sorry, the committee looked at the PDT's information and created four framework objectives that they will recommend to the council today. The purpose of the framework is, as shown on the board, maximize the chance for the Georges Bank herring tack to be caught, provide an incentive to fish inshore, provide incentives to fish in a manner and at times when or in areas where haddock bycatches none to low, to reduce the impact of a haddock cap on the entire herring fishery. And when Rip gives the committee report, he'll go into those in more detail. The committee identified four options for the herring framework. The first, of course, is no action. The second would be to use the existing cap procedures and basis, but to adjust it based on observer coverage levels. What this means is the existing cap is 0.2% of the combined Georges Bank and Gulf of Maine haddock tax, and that was in part based on the assumption that observer coverage would be 20% of the trips. So the theory here is, okay, if observer coverage is twice that or 40% of the trips, the cap would go up to 0.4%. The second option to no action was a stock-specific cap of 1% of the ABC and applied to the midwater trawl fleet only based on observed catch extrapolated to fleet by stock area. In other words, to have a Gulf of Maine cap and a Georges Bank cap and to close the appropriate area when one of those is reached. And then finally, the other alternative is to incorporate the haddock catches by the midwater trawl and other herring fishermen into what is referred as to the other subcomponent part of the ACL. You may recall that for a lot of our, for all of our stocks, I think, we have an other subcomponent part of the ACL, which is basically sort of a grab bag. We throw all the fisheries that catch a small amount of groundfish into there. We set it generally at 5%. I think there's one or two exceptions where it's higher. And then we monitor their catches. And the idea is that when, if we start seeing the amount here start to creep up above 5%, we're going to take a look at it, and we may at that point establish an actual sub-ACL and AM for a specific component. This sometimes gets misrepresented. It doesn't necessarily mean that a particular fishery starts crawling up above 5%, because if you went that route, you could considerably have 20 fisheries that all have 5% and not have any AMs. The idea here is, you know, if all these fisheries are catching less than 5%, we're not going to have specific sub-ACLs and AMs, but if they start to go above that, then we're going to take a harder look. So the idea here would be to incorporate the herring fishery into this, monitor for future changes, and then consider, if it gets starts to creep up, start to consider a different sub-ACL AM approach for the fishery. I would like to point out that at the committee meeting, these are very broad management measures, and we have not gotten into any of the weeds or any of the details yet about exactly how all of these measures would be implemented and what the details would be. Just as an example, the middle one, where we talk about closing the appropriate area. Well, we didn't actually sit down at the committee meeting and decide what the appropriate area is, whether it's to close the entire stock area or some subcomponent of the stock area for George's Haddock. We haven't done that. We haven't talked about any of those details. So the thought here, presumably, is that if the committee, if the council approves the committee options, then the committee and the PDT will go back and flesh out the details of all of these choices. So that concludes my presentation. Be willing to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Questions for Tom. Mary Beth.
Yeah, just one question, because I know there seemed to be a lot of discussion about the 5%. And in the FMP for groundfish, I think it was in Amendment 16, it was discussed how you deal with the bycatch in other fisheries and whether you needed, you know, sub-ACLs and AMs. And, Tom, is it when that a group of fisheries that are sort of grouped in there for small amounts, when the total aggregate amount exceeds 5%, then the council will look at it? Is that the right way to think about it or not?
To be blunt, the amendment is not really super clear on how we're going to look at it. The concept is that, you know, let's be real clear. It doesn't mean there's an AM. It means somebody else's AM has to cover that 5%, right? And basically, so what we're doing is we take 5% off the top before anything goes to the other parts of the groundfish fishery. Okay, so as long as we stay within that 5%, we're covered. And if the amount caught by these other fisheries starts to go above 5%, then the council has to make a decision. They could either increase the allocation or the allowance for these other subcomponents, or they can take a closer look at these other subcomponents and decide that one fishery in particular, perhaps, is driving the increase above that. And as a result, we've decided we're going to put a sub-ACL and an AM on that fishery. So I think the best way to look at that is that, and once again, this isn't spelled out very clearly in the amendment, that one way to look at that is, okay, you know, we've got this 5% in here. If it starts getting bigger, a council reaction is needed to make sure we're not exceeding our ACLs. And, you know, the exact form of that council reaction could take a lot of different avenues.
So, you know, it's the aggregate. I mean, if, you know, you're taking it off the top, you have to account for mortality and that whole group as in total. If it's above 5%, you either have to increase what you subtract or you have to, you know, have some management measures to address a particular fishery that may be in that group. Some people seem to have some idea that if we were to forward that particular measure, that the herring fishery would then be allowed to catch 5% of the tack, and that's not the case at all.
Well, I guess if they were the only ones catching haddock, it's potentially the case, right? But we don't really think they are the only other fishery catching haddock.
Dave Preble.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I'm clear on one part of that point, Tom. If we have the, let's say we increase the cap to 1%, does that 1% not only, is that a separate, so to speak, allocation for the midwater trawls, does that also become a part of the 5%, or is that a separate category then?
Well, if you establish a specific cap for the midwater trawl or herring fishery as it is now, that's a separate allocation. So right now, officially, you've got a cap of 0.2%, and we allocate that in addition to the 5% for the other subcomponents. You know, so there's 5.2% allocated in that case. In your example, there'd be 6% sent somewhere.
Dave Gettle.
Yeah, we received this morning, I guess, the standardized bycatch reporting methodology for 2011, what we were talking about yesterday, and I don't know if anybody's had a chance to look at it. I was reading through it, and I think it's very germane to today's discussion. I think we would need to know from the Science Center what changes would have to be made to this methodology if we picked the option that says we'll extrapolate based on observer coverage up to the 1%, or we pick the one that's the 5% for all these small mesh fisheries. I don't think either one of those is covered in this right now. And I just looked through it, and I admit my magnifiers aren't what they could be, so I'm having a hard time with the numbers in the tables and the pages in the 20s there. But I think we need some discussion of that to know whether our options are still viable in light of this document. So I don't know who wants to answer that question, whether it's, you know, Nancy or I see Jim disappeared. But we have to have a discussion of that because we have to know.
Yeah, I know. Jim obviously knows the details of this better than I do, but we've been having discussion about that. And as far as the observer coverage is concerned, of course, in the past it's been very, very small relative to the coverage for the herring fishery. And this last year it was unusual in the sense that it was significantly higher, which allowed us to move into these estimates. We haven't really come to any kind of conclusions yet in terms of what kind of coverage is required to meet the requirements of SBRM But remember that the estimates from SBRM, we're talking about CVs of 30%. So, I mean, obviously that's the question that I think everybody needs to ask. And we are, in fact, taking a look at that, but I don't have an answer. Maybe Jim can fill us in a little bit more in terms of the details of the SBRM and where we are and where we need to go. But you obviously have the opportunity to provide your recommendations as well, which is why we've provided this report. So I know that's not a very satisfying answer, but we understand what the question is, and we are looking into it.
And I understand that. I know we have to comment on this, and I guess my comment right now would be that those are questions we'll need answered as before this amendment or framework, you know, moves along too far. Because if the options that we're picking are basically undoable, then we need to know that as soon as possible so that we can either put other options up there or at least move them to considered but rejected. Because I don't want to see the staff spend a lot of time developing something that can't be done.
Well, I think that we have been lucky in a sense in terms of getting some additional funding in groundfish that's allowed higher levels of herring observer coverage than we've historically had. I suggest the council not choose an alternative that relies on that high level of observer coverage continuing, if that helps.
Yes, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just to that particular point, I don't need an answer right now, but I guess it will be, I'll need an answer as we get deeper into the recommendations of the committee, and that's on page 20 of the SBRM report. Table 4, the number of C days needed to achieve a 30% CV, et cetera, et cetera. And I go to the gear type, midwater pair and single trawl. And I go across the row, and I see that for herring, 30 sea days in the mid-Atlantic area, but none in New England. So if I'm reading that correctly, that's a consideration that we need to focus on, since obviously what we're proposing here involves extrapolation of observer coverage information to the entire fleet, and if there are zero trips in the New England area on midwater trawl vessels planned, then can't do it. So again, I guess I'm just checking on the accuracy of this, but am I interpreting this table right? And if I am, then I guess that'll affect my thinking as we move forward with these discussions on the committee recommendations.
David, you're on page 20, table 4. Doesn't it say 30 days in the mid and 190 in New England?
Probably bluebacks, yeah. I suspect. Yeah, so for I can understand why the 30 trips for midwater pair trawlers may be set for the mid-Atlantic area because of concern about river herring bycatch. But in terms of haddock bycatch, and our bycatch cap, we end up with zero trips scheduled. 190, yes, have been scheduled for dogfish trips. I'm not exactly sure why that's the case, but that seems to be the way in which the plans have been laid out regarding that 30% CV in these different fisheries.
Jim.
Thank you. I'd just like to kind of repeat what I said yesterday when I talked about this report, that we knew in October that the information was going to be coming to us with a delay, and basically this report has just become available to me yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to digest it, and our normal procedure would be to have Paul Rago or Wendy Gabriel or Amy Van Atten giving you a presentation. So we're putting the cart a little ahead of the horse right now to dig into the table before we have an expert here to explain it to you. So I understand your desire to dig into it right now, given the issues that we're talking about, but I'm just trying to put it in context.
Tom Neese?
Yeah, maybe just the easy thing to say is, table, I don't think, Dave asked if he's interpreting Table 4 correctly. I think the short answer is no, I don't think he is. Okay, I think Table 4 shows the maximum number of days needed for a species group. So in the case of the midwater trawl fleet, the maximum number of days needed to achieve the CV of 30% is 190 because of the need to achieve the CV for spiny dogfish. So that's why it's 190. That's what I believe is being shown here. But as Jim said, it'd probably be better to wait till Paul or somebody can explain it to us better.
Anyone else on the council? Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a series of motions to make. The first is not a committee motion because the committee spent time discussing the alternatives, and we need to do something to actually initiate the framework. So I would move that the council initiate framework 46 to the multi-species FMP to address the herring fishery haddock bycatch cap. That last part I added on to that, Karen. So that, Mr. Chairman, will need a second.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion? Mary Beth?
Well, I certainly do support the motion. I would just note one thing that I recall Tom bringing up at the committee meeting. As motions were being made, and there was the use of the term bycatch cap, and his correction for that was catch cap because of the definition. It's a very minor thing, but
I have no problem with it. I just happened to grab the language out of the document the way it was written. You're correct.
Any further discussion? Anyone in the audience on the motion on the board? Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to members of the council. I'm Jeff Kalin with Lunds Fisheries. And the only thing I wanted to say, I do support the motion clearly, but I didn't get into it the other day, but we know that this is going to focus on midwater trawling, that we don't see haddock bycatch in the purse seine fishery. And I just wanted council members to understand that that's because purse seines can't be used where we're catching the haddock. And I know that from experience, having worked on the Calvin Stinson, which was Charlie Stinson's 135-foot combination vessel that was in Maine for a number of years. There's too much tide on Georgia, so there's not an alternative here to eliminate midwater trawling and go purse seining, with the theory that, well, the purse seiners aren't catching any haddock, so, that's going to be an option for us. It's not, because operationally you can't seine in those areas. So that's a point that I wanted to make that I failed to make at the committee meeting, so thank you.
Anyone else on the motion on the board? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Doug Grout.
I'd just like a little clarification about the semantics here between bycatch and catch cap here that was clearly discussed at the groundfish committee meeting. This is not considered a bycatch. The haddock is not considered a bycatch in the herring fishery. Is that the reason?
Well, I mean, the Magnuson definition of bycatch is fish that are discarded. The herring fishery at present is, I believe, required to retain all haddock. So, in addition, we're trying to cap the haddock the total haddock they catch, whether they're required to retain it or not, we want to cap what they do catch, not just what they may discard. At present, discards would be illegal, but.
Anything further? Motion on the board? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. 16-0-0. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Tom had already pointed out in his presentation, we have some four objectives, and so I have a motion to recommend that Framework 46 have as objectives, one, maximize the chance for Georges Bank Area 3 herring tack to be caught, two, provide incentive to fish offshore, three, provide incentives to fish in a manner and at times and in areas when and where haddock bycatch is none to low. I don't know if we should change that word to haddock catch is none to low. Four, to reduce the impact of a haddock cap on the entire herring fishery. That is a committee motion. That motion passed the committee unanimously.
Discussion. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a correction. As that was scrolling up, I noticed that there was a missing word on the prior motion. Rip had said haddock, and it wasn't included in the wording. I was just reading through it as it was scrolled up. Address the herring fishery haddock catch cap. He said the word, so it's not adding anything to the motion. It just wasn't on there. Thank you.
Anything further? The council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 16. Rip.
The next motion is that the council establish a haddock catch cap for the midwater trawl fleet of 1% of the Georges Bank haddock ABC and 1% of the Gulf of Maine haddock ABC, and catch to be estimated from sea sampling observations extrapolated to the entire fleet by area. That was a committee motion, passed the committee 11-0 with one abstention.
Discussion on the committee motion. Mary Beth.
I, in general, support the motion. I just had a question for Tom, and in light of what Pat's comments were about not counting on the high level of observer coverage we had last year. Of course, last year we were talking about fairly close to 100%. I think there were just a handful of tows that actually took place at a time when we weren't catching haddock at a different time of year that didn't have observers on there. So that was very high in 2010. And, Tom, do you think it's okay if we just leave this like that and then the PDT can come back with analysis about whether this is really doable at different levels of coverage?
Yes, I think so. Seeing some quizzical looks, I think we can come back with an idea based on recent levels of observer coverage, what CV you're going to get at what percentage of coverage levels. I mean, this is basically the work that's done for the SBRM report, which is how they get their C-Day coverage. So I think we can tell you, based on recent experience, what kind of CV you're going to get. And then you can look at it and say, okay, is that important or not? And what I mean by that is, let's suppose that your estimate of bycatch, and I'm going to use crazy numbers, let's suppose your estimate of bycatch is 2 metric tons. Well, you may not really care if your CV is poor, and that means you might be catching as much as 6 metric tons, because you look at 6 compared to 40,000, and you know, you say that's an adequate estimate for us. On the other hand, if the numbers are bigger, you may want a better CV for this quota monitoring, which essentially this is quota monitoring, not discard monitoring. So, you know, it's a question both of what sort of CV you want and what are the impacts if you have a poor CV, which you can look at and say, okay, you know, what sort of observer level coverage levels are we going to need here? And if you look at the PDP report, we, and the committee talked about this a little bit and is may get into some of their later options, is that we talked about, you know, the council and the committee may want to design a framework that says, this is what we're going to do with adequate observer coverage, and if that's not there, then this is what happens, you know, so that there's like a backstop written into it if they decide to go that way.
Frank?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not going to make a bit of difference on Georgia's Bank, but on the Gulf of Maine Haddock, we have that stock that's already allocated between rec and commercial. And the way I read this, you're going to be taking 1% of the recreational catch away to give it to the herring fleet? I can't support that. Because I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, aren't the recs already going to exceed their catch for this year?
Well, we don't know if they're going to exceed it this year.
It'll
or
be
not.
Close.
Right.
Anyone else on the council? Mary Beth?
I don't know if I caught exactly what Frank said there, but I thought what he said was that we'd be taking 1% from the recreational ACL for Haddock, and that's not correct. Maybe I didn't hear him correctly, but this would take 1% off the top of the ABC before you said ACLs.
Yes, and I haven't actually figured out how that translates.
Anyone else on the council?
Tom, just to follow up on that question, theoretically, then it could take up to 1% off of the recreational actual number, correct?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm thinking on the fly here.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. But this proposed measure, like the other two we're about to discuss, are all just concepts for the committee and the PDT to develop. So I think these, Frank's issue and the observer issues are cross-cutting of for all of them. And so, at least from my perspective, are we endorsing this concept for development or not? And then let the committee do its work and come back to the council with answers to the questions.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Mr. Libby?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby, from Port Clyde, Maine, fisherman. The part about the 1% in the Gulf of Maine, to Frank's comment, 1% on judges probably won't affect the stock much at all, if at all. But the stock size of the Gulf of Maine is much smaller. I just think the council should consider the size of the stocks in each stock area. They're not the same, so maybe that 1% in the Gulf of Maine should have a different number on it. I'm not sure what that number would be, but maybe you keep that at the 0.2 and you move the judges up where the encounters mainly are. I don't know, but you can definitely do more damage where the stock size is smaller in the Gulf of Maine than you could on Judges Bank with the same percentages. Thank you.
Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I have a question before I comment on this. Do we know whether the haddock being caught in this fishery are feeding on the herring?
No, I don't know.
And I would suggest in that if this gets voted up, that's an extremely important factor for determining what the bycatch should be, because the haddock are getting larger, and as they get larger, and especially the fishery is underfishing the haddock, so we're going to get more, a very large biomass of large, heavy haddock out there that are going to be feeding more and more on their herring. So your bycatch rates are going to go up, and it might be very important to figure out what the bycatch rates are going to be, not in the past, but next year. And you might be surprised on how much haddock you might end up needing for this fishery to be prosecuted. Thank you.
Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Rudolph. I'm with the Pew Environment Group. I guess I also have a question before I make a comment, and maybe this is obvious, so I apologize if it is, but should this motion be worded to the effect that this is just one of the options the council wants to send forward? Because the way it's worded right now, technically it appears that this is all the council will recommend.
Well, in reality, there will be a series of alternatives to put into the document. I don't have see any reason why not to indicate in the motion that it is one of a series of alternatives, but there will be four of them or three of them done here, recommended today.
Yeah, I know that, so it's probably no big deal, but I just thought that in the past I've seen these things worded. Usually they open up with as one option or something. Okay, then I have two comments on this then, and I appreciate the chance to speak. First of all, it seems the intent of this option was to bump the percentage from 0.2% to 1%, and therefore I guess I'd like to know why this is coming off ABC when 0.2% used to come off of the TAC. And my understanding of the new ACL terminology is that the closest analog to the old acronym of TAC is the ACL. So I'm concerned that this motion actually goes from 0.2% to something probably a little bit larger than what would have been 1% under the old system. I think perhaps this would be more appropriately termed as coming off the ACL, and I know that might raise technical ACL issues that I don't have the best grasp of, but this is somewhat different from going on from 0.2% to 1% under the old Framework 43 system. And my other comment is that under this option, if haddock catches by the herring fleet are going to be extrapolated from observer data, then I would like to know how dumped tows would be accounted for under this option. I believe there would need to be some sort of assumption made about dumped tows on observed trips and how much haddock was in those tows. Thank you very much.
Tom?
With respect to the ABC ACL question, because of the council's desire to use different adjustments for management uncertainty for different components of the fishery with respect to the ACL, in Framework 44, we use the same mechanism when we calculate the different sub-ACLs for other components of the fishery as well. We first basically allocate each of them a chunk of the ABC, and then we adjust them for management uncertainty. In many cases, we use different adjustments based on what part of the fishery it is. As an example, we used a different adjustment for uncertainty for the midwater trawl fleet because of concerns over the monitoring of the fleet at the time. And then we do for the commercial groundfish fleet. We use a different numbers for different stocks. The only way we can really effectively do that is to first divvy up the ABC and then apply the different management uncertainty. This is, in fact, as Tom Warren pointed out at the committee meeting, how we did the sub-ACL for the midwater trawl fleet in Framework 44.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a couple of comments to make, and because of some of the comments that we received from the public, I think I'll make them now, although they tend to pertain to all of the motions. I think that, you know, in general, people will see that we have a pretty wide range of alternatives for this framework. But the one thing, at least in my mind, that is missing in these alternatives is pertains to objective number three, which is provide incentives to fish in a manner and at times and in areas when and where haddock bycatch is none too low. So I certainly hope that as the PDT and the committee works on these issues as they're developed to be brought back to the council for the next framework meeting, that we consider this and try to develop some sort of incentive for the industry to stay away from the haddock. Secondarily, there was the issue brought up about understanding more about some of the bycatch and the interaction between the haddock and the herring. And I would also like to see, and I think the PDT has done a very good job at looking at the catch of haddock, but I think we need to know some more about that. We need to look at not only the areas and stuff, but we need to look at the time of day that maybe some of the high catch interactions have taken place. So I think there's more that we need to learn from that, and I think that applies to all of these motions.
Anyone else in the council? Mary Beth?
Well, I agree pretty much with what Rip just said, but just to remind the council that in 2010, with our high level of observer coverage, you know, the majority of the incidental catch of haddock took place in four tows. So four tows out of, you know, 100 and something. I don't know if it's 112, 120, but somewhere in that range. So we're talking about, you know, pretty variable amount. I mean, a little hard for the industry to anticipate when that might happen at times. So, you know, the number that we currently are operating under is quite small. The number of tows in which you exceed, you know, like the 600 pounds that Jamie did in her work is quite small. So it's not a lot, just to keep in mind.
Mike Leary.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we actually have a number from the Science Center with how much trips were observed? Because, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I have close to 100% observer coverage, and I look back and it's like 50, 60%. So do we actually have a number of the trips that were observed this year on Georgia's Bank? Because if the trips, you look at that number with four observed trips, they have 280 tons. If you're going to extrapolate and you have low observer coverage, you're going to blow right through the 1%. You know, 600 pounds with one boat with 1 million pounds of herring, you extrapolate it through and you go right through these numbers quickly. So I'm just curious what the number of observed trips were on Georgia's Bank this year.
Frank.
There you go. I'm not sure if 1% had a catch to be examined. And water troll. Okay, the TAL is gone from here. The council members, the ABC, okay. Your ABC is a higher number. After your ABC, you put in your management uncertainty, if I'm correct. And then you're going to divide that number up to come down to your TAC, so your rec and commercial. So your 1% of the TAL is a much larger number than 1% of the TAC. This is not a 1% number. I mean, I support the concept here, but I mean, this number is starting to grow. When you take it out of a percentage of what you've already divided up, those that have an allocation, your allocation's going down here, and it's not going down by a small amount. I mean, 1% sounds small, but you got to take. I don't know what our management uncertainty is on the haddock.
Tom.
Well, I mean, there's a lot being said that I'm not sure is really accurate of what's going on. I mean, one of the earlier speakers said that the thing that's most analogous to the old TAC is the ACL. I'm not sure I agree with that statement. The old TAC was based on a specific fishing mortality, and we took the median catch off a specific fishing mortality, and we said that's the TAC. We didn't adjust it for management uncertainty. We didn't do anything to it. We just said that's the TAC. That's not that far different than how the SSC is calculating the ABCs right now. They're taking the fishing mortality that they deem appropriate and that we use as a control rule, and they're calculating the median value generally that comes out of that, and they're saying that's the ABC. So in a lot of respects, the ABC and the TAC, the old target tax, are really closer than the target tack and the ACL. Then we take that ACL and we back it off. I'm sorry. Then we take the ABC, we divvy it up to all the components, and we chop something off, we take something off for management uncertainty. And now we get down to the ACL. So, I mean, what's going on, you know, the question of whether this is now a much larger number than it would have been, I don't think that's really accurate. I mean, if we take 0.2% of the ABC, it's not really that much different than when we took 0.2% of the target tack because of the way these are calculated. Obviously, 1% is 5 times as big as 0.2% if we do make that change. Okay, you know, that's obvious. But I don't think at this meeting anyway we really need to get hung up over the calculation method because I think it's actually quite similar. And as I pointed out, it is the way we calculated, I'm going to say all, and I can't think of a different example. I think it's how we calculated almost all the other components. The one area where I think it perhaps is different might be with the allocation of cod and haddock to the wrecked fishery, but I'd have to think about that further. I'm not really willing to give an opinion right now on that. Because in that case, we calculate the ABC, we give the ground fish fishery an ABC and split that up between the wreck and commercial fleet.
I think Tommy made a couple of good points. One of them that we're putting options together to put into a framework for further development. And I would ask if it's possible that you could visually present to the committee when they take this issue up again, just exactly how the pie, if you will, is cut up, the calculations.
Sure.
I think that would just be helpful, much like they did in the scallop, they've done in scallop between limited access and general category. And I'm going to get back to Mike Leary's question. I don't know if there's somebody in the room that can answer the question about what happened in 2010. Nancy?
I mean, all I can tell you at this point, again, I'd have to look at Jim, or maybe there's somebody from the Observer program that can be more specific about trips per area. But, I mean, obviously the 0.2% of the ACL was based on 20% coverage as far as I understand, and I'm looking at Jim to correct me or anybody else. And as I understand it, as far as the Observer coverage, the realized Observer coverage over the entire fishery, it certainly was not 100%, but it was probably somewhere between 20 to 30%. I think it was higher. It was clearly higher than what we've had in the past. But again, the question is relative to estimates, SBRM, and the 30% CV. And so we're not going to know that answer until we do the analysis at the end of the season.
There's a huge difference between 100% and 30%. And so if we're trying to get, I mean, you get 30% coverage and you hit this number, it's a lot different than 100%. That's all. I'm just saying, if you're going to extrapolate, the less coverage you have, the more variation there's going to be.
Anyone else on the council? Pat?
Just to clarify that point, the 100% is required in the closed areas, so that's what I think people are referring to. But you'd asked about all of Georgia's Bank, and that's what Nancy's response was.
Mary Beth?
I thought that Nancy's response was coverage across the fishery in all areas is not 100%, was the 30%. But most of that's driven by the high level of coverage on George's Bank, which is, as Pat indicated, because of the closed area one rules. So when I said 100%, I mean, if you look at the data, there is no bycatch of haddock in area two. So I should have probably been more clear, but I was referring just to the area three fishery.
Dr. Pierce.
I think some of the data that you're looking for is in the report prepared by Jamie Cornane, the January 2011 report, where the numbers of trips by statistical area broken down by two-month periods and the number of sets and hauls observed are recorded. You can reference that document. It's a little hard to pull out exactly how many trips were sampled, but nevertheless, the data are there for a look-see.
Anyone else on the council with a motion? Jim Arthur.
Just a question to Tom. Tom, isn't a cap different than an allocation? Some people, I think, are confusing this as an allocation, and there's a difference between a cap and an allocation, I think.
Well, there can be, but I think in this case, we've been treating it as an allocation.
Anyone else? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. Rip.
Thank you. On behalf of the committee, I move to incorporate the herring fishery haddock catches into the other subcomponents of the ACL and monitor for future changes. Committee motion carried 6 in favor, 5 against, 2 abstentions.
Questions or discussion on the committee motion? Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick thing. I think that in light of the change that was made in the wording of the first one, that we should make that same change to all of them.
Discussion or question from the council? Dr. Pierce.
At the committee meeting, I opposed this particular motion because this strategy was seen to be inconsistent with the objectives of the framework. However, I haven't yet concluded that is the case, so I'll vote this forward for further work by the PDT and the Groundfish Committee. But I do so, again, with some misgivings, and I'll either prove myself correct or incorrect when we get further review and analysis of this particular strategy.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Rip said, this motion was pretty hotly debated at the committee last week, and the intent of it was just to provide a full range of alternatives for development. The devil's in the details. We've talked about the observer issues that we're going to have to wrestle with. It's clearly not intended to be an incentive to increase the haddock catches, but as a different measure to deal with them. And should it move ahead for development, I think, as David said, we're going to have to look very carefully and see whether or not, as PDT and the committee flushes this out, it applies to the goals and to the objectives that we've just voted through.
Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion, and one of the major reasons that I do is that an issue with how the catch cap works now is that it couples together the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank. And originally, the Groundfish Committee had recommended what was more similar to our previous motion in which you'd have separate tax for each area. However, the agency said that the amount for the Gulf of Maine was so small that it would be almost impossible to monitor that, and therefore the council grouped them together, and should you hit the cap, then it closes almost the entire Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank. And that's very problematic, particularly when the catches in the Gulf of Maine are so low. So I think that this motion and alternative will allow the PDT to do the work, and we can make choices based on what's appropriate by area. And this may not be appropriate for Area 3. I'd like to see what the analysis says, but my thinking in looking back at how we got to where we are today, that it's likely that it may be appropriate for the Gulf of Maine. So I would hope that people not get too caught up in the concept across the fishery. PDT will do their work, and then we'll have an opportunity to make choices.
Doug?
Just having got the full PDT report, one of the issues that I saw in the original report for the PDT to the council was to the committee was to have individual trip limits. And I think particularly with this type of an option, that might be an appropriate way of providing incentives to fish in a manner and times and areas when and where haddock bycatch is none or low. And so I wanted to know if there was any discussion about including as an option here for consideration these individual trip limits that were discussed, I believe, in the sixth item that was in the PDT document. It's on, there's no page numbers on in this document, at least on this page. I think it's page 13.
Jim?
Thank you. I was just looking through the PDT report, which is document number 2, and the Mike Leary had asked about the number of trips in the different areas, and tables 3 and 4 list those by year for Georges Bank. I think Dr. Pierce also indicated a document, but I'm not sure it was the same one I'm referring to. But anyway, document number 2, tables 3 and 4.
Sally?
Yeah, I opposed this motion at committee and continue to. Quite simply, this would allow for an increase in bycatch, and that's contrary to our requirement to minimize bycatch. So I'm going to continue to oppose this motion. Thank you.
What else on the council? Doug?
I had a question of the committee. Was there any discussion of this option for individual trip limits, and I didn't get a response from either the committee chairman or the plan coordinator, PDT
Tom?
Chair.
Rip?
My recollection was that it was not a discussion item.
Doug?
So my follow-up on this is I'm going to it would be very difficult for me to support this without some kind of an option that would have some accountability for the fleet, and I think these individual trip limits would be an appropriate way to do it. Not wanting to get into a substitute motion thing, I'd like to plan on adding another option here after, depending on how this motion moves forward.
You're talking about a haddock trip limit?
Correct.
Okay. Anyone else on the council? Terry?
Yeah, just to follow up, Doug. If as you go through the PDT recommendations, there's a number, as you said, a number of different possible measures, and this one that is on the board right now is one of them, and no, we did not discuss the individual trip limits, but I think it would be appropriate to make a follow-up motion if.
Anyone else on the council? Mike?
Yeah, I don't know if I wasn't clear on my question. I mean, Dr. Jim and Dr. Pierce both brought me to the documents that bring us up to 2009. I wanted to know what happened last year. That's all. Apparently, we can't find out. So I'll just go with close to 100%, which to me is about 60% in my case. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council? Go to the audience. Mr. Libby?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby, Port Clyde, Maine. I don't think I'm in favor of this option, only because there was some comments at the committee meeting about this is how it's done in Groundfish, and it would be fair to do it in a similar fashion. But the midwater trawl fleet tows small mesh and they kill small fish, where the groundfish fleet's towing a 6 or 6.5 inch mesh, depending on if they're fishing in the haddock closed areas and stuff at certain times. And they're not killing the juveniles, so there's a different component in there. And I think you should consider that the composition of the catch of the herring trawlers is going to be right down to the small juveniles because of the small mesh. So that's part of the reason why I think the bycatch levels can get much higher in there, and I think a percentage cap may be more effective for this fleet. And I like the Terry's idea about the possible limit that gives incentive to avoid the haddock. I think more incentives to avoid the haddock would probably solve a lot of our problems here. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
Just to that concern about the size of the haddock catch, and it can be a concern because certainly the biological impacts to catching juvenile fish versus adult fish, and so the PDT did look at that, and it does not appear to be an issue. The fishery, I believe, and Tom could correct me, when this first occurred, it was because of a large year class. And so, yes, those fish in that particular time frame were smaller, but the information we have now is that we're not really catching a lot of juvenile fish, and I forget the numbers. As far as the 5% and small mesh, I mean, there are other small mesh fisheries that are included in the 5%, so we would not be alone. But, again, I would remind people that this may not be appropriate for all areas of the fishery. But we may find that it is appropriate for some. So my preference is to let the PDT do their work.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, I think Mary Beth just summed it up. I'm not going to waste time with it. I reluctantly supported it at the committee. I don't think it's where we're going to go, but there are a lot of open questions that I don't have answered yet, so I'm going to vote for it, but not, you know, singing and dancing.
Anyone else? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Three. Abstentions? One abstention. Two abstentions. Motion carries 12-3 with two abstentions. Rip.
Thank you. One additional motion. I think we need to put the same as an option for 46 at the beginning, to adjust the existing cap by observer coverage applied to haddock stock area. Committee motion passed the committee 7-5.
Discussion on the committee motion. Dr. Pierce.
This is on its face, it seems like a sensible course of action. However, if we do end up with, let's say, 20% observer coverage when this framework is in place, then that would mean the cap is 0.2%. So it's status quo. That's been my dilemma with this particular motion. Status quo is not acceptable. It's not, it would be inconsistent with the objectives that we've set for this particular framework, in my view. It would lead to the continued situation that we witnessed this year when in Area 3 we had a TAC of 38,146 metric tons and the industry only took 40% of that, 15,000 metric tons approximately. That's a lot of tonnage that was not caught because of concern about the bycatch of haddock. Vessels stayed away from Area 3 for fear they would catch that cap and then be prohibited from fishing in most of the Gulf of Maine as well as Georgia's Bank all the way to the end of the fishing year, brownfish fishing year. So that's my fear, that when all is said and done, we may end up with assigned 20% observer coverage, and then that just triggers back to the 0.2%. So for that reason, I oppose the motion at the committee meeting, especially since with a likely lower observer coverage around 20%, we may actually end up with a situation where we would continue to impose on the sea herring fishing industry, the midwater trawl fishery, specifically in the processors that receives that fish, in a sense, it equates to a ban on that type of fishing activity on Georgia's Bank and elsewhere for that matter, but specifically Georgia's Bank. So I'm going to oppose the motion because I think it equates to status quo. And can't have two status quos. That's my position on that.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one clarification, David. I mean, in your opinion, it may be status quo, but if you look at this, it's applied to haddock stock area. That's substantially different than the true status quo. And the PDT obviously hasn't done the development on it. It might also apply to area closures being done on the haddock stock area, which is different than status quo.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes, I was just going to say that the fact is we don't know what the observer coverage is going to be, and that's why this motion is here, because it could be 10%, it could be 30, it could be 50. We have no idea. And if it's a low number, it's going to be very hard to extrapolate when 100% of the haddock are caught, which is the first motion. So you need something in here to deal with the variability in observer coverage. Now, you know, the other possibility is, as an example, I mean, if it was me and I was leaving 25,000 tons of fish on the table, I'd hire observers to prove that I could go out there and do this. So it may be that the industry, if this is the one that we pick, may decide that at this point, because of the amount of fish that are involved and the low level of observer coverage potentially, that it's worth hiring observers and paying them to go with them. But that's up to the industry. I hesitate to make observers mandatory, but I certainly have no problem making them voluntary in order to achieve attack.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was opposed to this motion last week. Like Dr. Pierce, I was concerned that this measure was a second version of status quo. Rip's comments about the areas is important, and for that reason, I'm in favor of moving this ahead for committee development.
Anyone else? Dave Preble?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Dave Gaethel said it very well, and I'd also point out that in the PDT conference call, page 2, it's uncertain if future observer coverage levels for this fishery will be adequate to support fishery-wide catch estimates, and it would be wise to prepare an alternative approach should observer coverage decline. So for that reason, I will at this time support it.
Anyone else on the council? Mike Leary?
Yeah, are we going to do this in conjunction with extrapolation? Because I think if you do, we're going to be in the same thing. They're going to blow through this number even quicker. You know, if you have extrapolation and a minimum number of trips, then you lower the cap, and we'll be right back here again.
Well, I'd like to make 2 points. In answer to Mike, no. This would maintain the existing monitoring provisions, in essence, of the cap, where the cap is only monitored based on what's seen, basically. There would not be an extrapolation. The other thing is,
with respect to Dr. Pierce's comments about what would have happened this year, through the end of November, approximately 80% of the trips on Area 3 were observed. And so this year, what would have happened was the cap would have, had we known this in advance anyway, the cap would have been increased roughly fourfold from where it is now. I don't know if that still would have been constraining on the herring fishery or not, but it wouldn't, if this measure was adopted, the cap would have gone up about four times this year. And so they would have caught whatever the number is, which would have been, you know, one-fourth as much of what the cap was.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, I think as Tom pointed out, there are ways to make this motion work, but it does need some work. I just don't know how much time we want to spend here on it and whether it might be better to let the committee do that.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen opposed. One abstentions. One. Motion carries 15-1. One abstention. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all we have under ground fish for today.
Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned earlier, one of the concerns I had with particularly one of the motions we just passed was to have some kind of accountability. And one of the goals that we've put forward for this framework is to provide incentives to fish in a manner and at times in areas when and where haddock bycatch is none or low. And so I'd like to make a motion to include an option in framework 46 for individual trip limits for midwater trawl vessels fishing in Area 3. Options for the trip limit could include, but not be limited to, bycatch amounts that exceeded the 90th and 99th percentile for this area in gear type using the observer data from 2005 to 2009.
Is there a second? Dave Gaethel. Discussion? Terry?
Yeah, thanks, Doug, for that. And reflecting on last week, we did look at the cons that the PDT discussed in their briefing page, and the difficulty to hold the individual's accountability and the difficulty to enforce and monitor, I think, is what precluded us from moving this option ahead. I'm not opposed to this motion. I think I think we should we should explore it, but I think there might be parts of it that we can apply to some of the other measures that we've just moved ahead.
Mary Beth.
I don't think I really understand the motion. That last part, that bycatch amounts that exceed the 90th and 99th percentile for this area, what would be the trip limit? I don't get that part.
I don't have a specific trip limit. What I was looking at is trying to give the PDT some guidance in the direction that they would be looking for, because if we just say, give us a trip limit, we'd like to have a trip limit in there, what they would say, well, how would we base this on? So what I was looking at is there's, particularly in Georges Bank, there's some events that occur that are relatively rare, that they're large catch events. And what I'm looking at is coming up with some kind of trip limit that would discourage people from fishing in a manner or in an area that would encounter those high catches. And so what I'm trying to do is give some kind of guidance to the PDT, but not limit them in their analysis here for what an appropriate, what, and the committee, give the committee some guidance in where, how you should look at it. I look at those as relatively rare events, and it might include some of these events that are in excess of 5,000 pounds that you see on the graph here. And I don't know what that's going to end up being, but so that's why I'm just providing some kind of guidance for it.
Pat Kirkham?
Well, if they're mixed in, it's not clear to me how that gets measured at sea. And doesn't this just encourage them to throw them overboard, which I would think is a worse outcome? So.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions concerning this. One is, why wouldn't we use 2010 information? It's a more current number, and it's reflective of what's happening within the industry now, and maybe the most current 3 years rather than going back so far, because that will reflect really the conditions, I think, more in the haddock fishery than anything. Secondly, I don't know what this means for what happens when the trip limit is triggered. I also agree with what Pat says in terms of, you know, how are you going to measure that at sea? And does this mean that the trip limits are the only constraining factor of this rather than some overall cap? I understand where you're trying to get to, but I think it opens up a whole bunch of avenues that need to be explored.
Doug.
And I agree. First of all, the reason I used that time period was only because that was the time period that some of the PDT analysis was based on. And if we want to include 2010 or a different year, I can take out those years and let the PDT and the committee choose the years that would be appropriate. That's fine with me. Secondly, my intent with this option was to have an option in there that in certain cases, if we could choose this option in addition to some of the cap options that we've developed. I didn't necessarily feel a need to link this to a specific option. I thought this could be one of the four or five options we have in this that we could choose. And we could choose one from column A and one from column B, or we could just choose one from column A. But I agree with Pat, you know, there's certain things about this that may not be palatable, may not be something we want to do, but I wanted something in here at least to have some kind of accountability, particularly if we were looking at the option where we'd included within the essentially the 5% level.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I seconded this motion because I, on reflection after the committee meeting, I think we need more options in the document. I received a lot of correspondence from both sides of this issue that seemed to indicate that we didn't have enough options. And I actually am prepared to offer another one after this. You know, this does have a lot of issues. It's going to take some work. I mean, one of the things I see is it would probably require in order for it to be effective, 100% observer coverage at sea and 100% dockside monitoring to make sure that all the haddock are actually weighed and measured. And that's, you know, when it comes to a final vote, that's problematic for me. But I still think we need options in here both to increase, you know, increase the catch, which is what the first three did, and but we also need some options to increase the accountability, which is what this does and what I plan to offer here in a few minutes. So I think we should support it and at least let the PDT give us a report on it.
Anyone else? Mary Beth?
I'm starting to get concerned about the direction of the conversation. This is supposed to be a limited framework that needs to be implemented in 2011 because the catch cap for 2010 essentially closed the area to the fishery. We didn't reach the cap because the fishery stopped prosecuting the fishery because it would have closed the Gulf of Maine as well. So this is, you know, a serious issue for us. When we first had this conversation, it was a choice between a request for an emergency action or moving a framework quickly. Adding measures to the framework is going to slow it down. We are not talking about a stock that is overfished or even fished to its limit, not even close. I mean, people talking about 100% observer coverage, you know, yellowtail in the scallop fishery. We have an allocation for a fish that's in a rebuilding program where we don't require 100% observer coverage. This particular motion brings up many issues which people have already raised. Currently, we're required to keep all the haddock. We cannot discard any haddock. This would require a trip limit, which would require you to discard haddock that was above the trip limit, which is problematic in a fishery that pumps fish, which is why we ended up with what we have today. Additionally, as we already discussed, these are rare events. The four trips that you know were over the 20,000 pound amount. I mean, is that the number that you would pick and allow everybody to land 20,000 every time? I mean, that's not an incentive to minimize your interactions with haddock at all. Across the fishery, it actually increase. You know, or just why bother to care one way or the other if you can have, you know, 20,000? I mean, so it does depend on the amount, but then small amounts are almost impossible for captains to accurately estimate what they have. Throwing a bunch of options in here is just not what we're supposed to be doing. If you have issues about coverage levels in the fishery as related to haddock, bring it up this afternoon under Amendment 5. This is supposed to be a streamlined, move-it-forward framework, and adding a bunch of stuff in here is just not appropriate. It is appropriate if people have concerns, and even if I don't agree with them, to bring it up under Amendment 5.
Jimmy.
Yeah, my comments are just that it's really not a practical motion, and just I'm going to vote against it just because it's not practical. And just to have it in there to give the staff work, to have another option that's not practical, just doesn't make any sense to me. Come up with something else that's more that is a practical option if you want another option, but this is not practical in the fisheries. Thank you.
Any council member wishing to speak in favor? In favor of this motion? All right, I'll go to the audience. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak in favor of the motion? Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Two. Opposed? Fifteen. Abstentions? Motion fails. 2-15. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I have a motion I would like to make. And it relates to the concern that I have, I think the most of us have, about the potential amount of observer coverage in the midwater trawl fishery this coming year. Concern about the extent of the coverage was expressed by Sue Murphy during our meeting, and she emphasized that we should not think that there's going to be a high level of observer coverage. And I can't recall exactly what she said relative to expectations, but the service has got funding cutbacks. So we have to lower our expectations, I think, regarding the amount of observer coverage that we will actually have. So with lower observer coverage, we then end up with a problem related to the first motion that we passed, which I completely support, and that is when we take the sampling of the fishery and we extrapolate it upwards to characterize the entire catch of the fishery itself. In this particular case, the amount of haddock that would be caught from potentially a limited number of trips. It's like 20%, who knows? But we don't have that information at this time. So I would move And by the way, I completely appreciate the fact that this motion will not be well received by the fishing industry itself. But still, I feel it's in the best interest of the industry in order to take advantage of what was lost this year. 22,700 metric tons of fish was not caught. I think that translates into a lot of money. A lot of money that could be used for a number of good purposes in this particular case that relates to my motion. So I move that there be a 100% observer coverage on midwater trawl vessels fishing in Area 3 during September and October when haddock catch can be high. This coverage will be funded by fishing vessels making trips in Area 3 at that time. And if I get a second, I'll elaborate a little bit regarding why I have selected those 2 months.
There a second? Seconded by Mr. Libby. David?
Okay. I'm strongly influenced by the work that was done by Jamie Curnane. Looking at all the figures that she assembled, identifying haddock bycatch in the directed Atlantic herring fishery, September and October do appear to be the times when the problem of occasional high catch of haddock can occur. So it seems to me then that it's in the best interest of the industry itself to have this kind of complete observer coverage, with the funding being provided by the industry itself. I'm not proposing to require the coverage for the entire year in Area 3 or many months in Area 3, only in September and October. September is when the industry shut itself down this past year, because of concern about the haddock bycatch. Therefore, the 100% observer coverage seems sensible in the context of our going up from 0.2% to 1%.
To the motion on the board, questions or comments from council? Mary Beth?
Well, for some of the reasons for the past motion that I stated, I didn't support it. I also don't support this, in that there is no mechanism for the industry to pay for observers, and so therefore this will slow down this framework. And it's likely that if this is included in this framework, that we will not have a cap that increases in 2011. This really changes things dramatically by having the industry pay for this coverage. And I also would remind you that currently we already have a requirement for any trip into closed Area 1 that you must have an observer on board. So there is a requirement for that, which is why we ended up with such a high rate under the current rules. So in one sense, I question whether you need it, since we have regulations that have created a high level. And it will slow the framework down, because there is no mechanism currently to implement this in the fishery. So, again, I would say that, concerns about observer coverage in the fishery should be addressed in Amendment 5. And if we want to move this framework, which the council said was their intent, that we would not include this.
Dave Gaten? Pass. Anyone else on the council? Tom Neese?
Yeah, I guess Lori and I have a couple questions. Maybe Gene or the service may want to weigh in on these. One is, can we, and maybe the simple answer is yes or no, but can we, I think this is maybe a question for Gene. Can this be done does it matter if this is done in a groundfish framework? Does it have to be a joint groundfish herring action? And then the other question or thing that Lori wanted me to point out is that this may have implications on the development of the herring amendment, because the herring amendment is trying to address coverage levels throughout the fishery, and this would be kind of a curveball as to how they're doing that, apparently. I don't know the details. You'll have to ask Lori if you want the details.
I think technically it can be done in the herring framework, because it is, a herring observer, a requirement for herring fishermen to have observers in order to observe bycatch of groundfish, I think, can be done in the groundfish FMP or through a groundfish framework. This is not unlike closing areas to scallop fishermen because of groundfish bycatch, for example. So this is just one additional measure to ensure that groundfish conservation is addressed in a fishery that takes groundfish. Now, I think it's always better to coordinate these between the competing fishery management plans if possible. If there are conflicts in one way or the other, so that what you're doing in groundfish conflicts directly with something that's being proposed in herring, then those two, that conflict should be resolved between the two plans or actions, so that you don't have to deal with the conflict after it's too late.
Lori?
Yeah, just a follow-up to that. I mean, I was less concerned with the groundfish action requiring levels of observer coverage in the herring fishery, and more concerned with the fact that at this time in the herring FMP and in the herring fishery, we haven't established any provisions for industry-funded observer coverage at all. My question was more about the requirement for the industry to pay for observers, whether or not, number one, that would need to be a herring action, and number two, since that requirement doesn't exist right now, is that something that is even frameworkable? Or would that have to be done through an amendment with a thorough analysis? I mean, we haven't even, in Amendment 5, we're starting to go through requirements for service providers and things like that in the event of industry funding, but I guess my question relates more to not only can that be done through a groundfish action, but also if it is, you know, if it's a coordinated action, is it a frameworkable item for the herring fishery?
You mean the observer requirement? I mean, I missed the first part of your statement.
What?
The requirement for the industry to pay for it. We don't have a mechanism in the plan right now for industry-funded coverage. That's something we're working on in the amendment. And I guess my question was, number one, can it be done through a groundfish action? And number two, even if it's if it's a joint action with herring, can it be done through a framework?
The requirement to pay, I think, does raise an issue as to whether that's frameworkable, because that's that, I believe, is a measure that has never been contemplated for groundfish or herring vessels. It's not something that is present in the plans now, I don't believe, based on my memory of those plans. And if that's the case, then the framework is not adjusting an existing measure. It's actually introducing a new measure.
Council, anything further on the motion on the board? Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Like the motion before, I think this one has too many moving parts that we don't understand the complications yet. This one has linkages to the ongoing, potentially linkages to the ongoing herring amendment. So I'm not ready to support that at this time.
Dave Preble?
Yeah, I agree with what Mark just said. What I'm wondering about is I think that my gut feeling is this is more appropriate in the herring action. And what I'm wondering is if the herring action can consider 100% observer coverage for a groundfish. Is that something we can do with the herring amendment?
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I clearly understand the linkage between this particular motion and the herring amendment that's been in development for 3 years or so. As indicated by Mary Beth, this is a very important action that is to increase this haddock bycatch cap. And we're running out of time. At our last council meeting, I actually considered making a motion to do this on an emergency basis. But after further discussion, it seems sensible to put that idea aside And Pat in particular was very quick to point out that, you know, frameworkable action, we might be able to get it done in time for this coming fall, you know, might, recognizing all the uncertainty there. So to say, well, we'll take care of it in the amendment means we have to call 2011 a wash, maybe 2012 a wash. Maybe we can't wait that long. So, again, this is just my attempt to try to get things moving in the right direction, that is to give ourselves a better understanding of what actually is taken as haddock bycatch. Now, if Gene is correct, then obviously he's correct. We can't do this through a framework, then I'm not sure how to deal with this particular motion. Perhaps the chair should rule on this. But if we don't and we vote on it, and if it gets voted down, then I would strongly encourage the fishing industry to voluntarily put observers on every boat so that they don't find themselves having extrapolated information to characterize their haddock catch from a sparse amount of trips that may be sampled by observers, not funded by them.
Yeah, I mean, to clarify, I think the requirement to pay is not frameworkable. Requiring 100% observer coverage is frameworkable, I believe. You know, there's obviously practical problems with how that would be achieved, and what happens if 100% is not available.
Well, in light of the fact that our legal counsel tells us, and several council members have identified the frameworking and industry compulsory monitoring program is not legal, I'd have to rule that portion of the motion out of order.
I suggest you rule the whole motion out of order because I don't intend to separate it. So,
the motion's out of order. Dave Gaethel.
Yes, I'd like to offer a motion that would read, identify months and areas, comma, of herring area 3, comma, where haddock interactions are likely, and develop an option for closing the directed herring fishery in these areas during these periods.
Is there a second? Doug Grout? David?
The reason I put this forward is I think we need some kind of motion. Everything seems to be failing here. We need some kind of motion that requires increased accountability here. As everybody keeps saying, there's a rare, you know, a few number of tows. They're identifiable. We've got the information. The area is quite clear. If you look at the bubbles, where these areas are and what time of year they are. And, you know, we're being told by the industry on one hand we can't avoid the haddock, and then we're being told on the other hand, but it only happens once in a while. So it appears to me that a time area closure may be an option to solve this problem. It would be a relatively small, like a GRA, a gear-restricted area. We could identify basically a strip there and a couple of months where, you know, those interactions have occurred and just say you can't fish here during this time. Again, if all else fails with the issue of observers and everything else, we need an option in here to solve this problem. So that's my rationale.
Dr. Pierce?
I appreciate that suggestion, and it sounds like it has merit, but I look at that as more of a long-term initiative. We'll never get this done in time for this coming fall. We're already probably on the edge of getting it in time for 2011, September and October. This will take too much time. The framework will not be done. In addition, the herring fishery in September and October is on the northern edge, and that's where the haddock are. And we have a huge biomass of haddock that cannot be avoided. I mean, haddock, yes, I'm sure at times the midwater trawl is too close to the bottom, maybe even touches the bottom. I don't know. But it's not purely in the midwater. I mean, it's where the herring may happen to be. So the interaction will occur. That's why the 1% cap makes a great deal of sense, with the industry knowing that they're going to have to move themselves around to try to prevent that 1% cap from being taken. So the northern edge is a very special area for a number of very good reasons, as any fisherman knows. Haddock are there and herring are there. So to identify boxes and how many boxes and at what time, too much time to develop and it basically kills any effort for this coming year.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate David's intent to provide another alternative here, but I'm opposed to any motion that closes an area because an interaction might be likely. We're not talking about a river herring here. We're talking about haddock. We don't get the OY. We're a long way from them being threatened. We can certainly reduce the likelihood, but closing areas in productive areas is not the way to go.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may just ask the maker of the motion, is your intention for this that it could potentially be added in as part of any of the other alternatives versus one that stands simply by itself?
I hadn't really thought about it that way, but yeah, I mean, I assume any of these alternatives we can mix and match. We always have in the past. What I want to do is basically have the PDT identify areas and times where they think this might be appropriate and then see what the committee wants to do with it at the committee level.
Anyone wishing to speak in favor on the council, in favor of the motion? Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm speaking in favor of this motion because, as you've heard before, I'm struggling here because I think this is an important framework. I think we need to make some adjustments to our past management action because it was based on a static 0.2%, because that's how much the observer coverage was back then. Now, we have a range of options that we're putting in here to try and adjust that to make it a more reasonable cap. The part that I am struggling with, and the reason I put my motion forward and why I second this motion, is I don't see in this framework, measures that address the third objective here, which is to provide incentives to fish in a manner and at times and areas when and where the haddock bycatch is none or low. You know, I also looked within the PDT's document, and one of the suggestions that most appealed to me was a catch share, which each vessel would be given a certain amount of haddock, and once they caught that as a bycatch, then that vessel would be done. But that's an amendment, and that's not going to get this thing done. If there's some other option that we could put in here that would try to address the objective three here, I'm looking for any help, maybe help from the industry or anybody else. At this point, I'm going to support this only because it's the one thing that it was the one thing that will address that particular objective, although I see it as a pretty severe hammer.
Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is for Tom. It seemed to me that the PDT has done quite a lot of work on the overlap between herring and haddock. So I am wondering whether or not this would require a lot more work and impact on the ability to complete the document in time.
Well, I think the what we have looked at is the, as you pointed out, where the overlap is. What we really haven't looked at, and which might take some time, would be to identify what would be the impact of these closures, wherever they turn out to be, on the herring fishery. And to try and evaluate that might be more difficult than identifying the areas that we think would be appropriate.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, I think the times and areas the PDT already did, you know, look at that, and it's in the document, and clearly it would close the fishery in a wide area in September and October on George's Bank. And that pretty much means for the midwater trawl fishery, you're closing the fishery at the height of the bait market demand in New England. That's what this means. And I really struggle. I mean, I struggled with objective three and how we would address that. And the cap itself is really all we have. And the industry needs to manage that cap. That's the intent. That is the accountability measure. And I also struggle with this to why? What is the problem? We're underfishing haddock to, I don't remember what the percentages are, but we're under 50%. This is not a mortality issue. It is an economic issue. It has significant impacts, not just to the handful of boats that may be herring fishing on, in Area 3, but also to the lobster fishery. This past year, those fish coming out of Area 3 supplied the bait market. You know, certainly in the state of Maine and elsewhere in New England. I mean, that's the problem here. It's an economic issue. Should we have no accountability measures? No, we need to have one. The cap is the accountability measure. And these types of things, close it for September, October. That's closing the fishery. That's it. I don't support the motion.
Frank.
Yeah, thank you. I find this motion inconsistent with the one with raising the haddock cap. I mean, you're going to raise the cap so they don't have a problem, and now we're going to close it. So, I mean, if you weren't going to raise the cap, I think you would put something like this in to keep them from avoiding him. But we raised the cap so they wouldn't have a problem, and now this is going to create the more problems, which I think goes against, I think it's number four in the objectives. So I'm going to oppose this.
Rodney?
I also going to oppose this. Haddock moves around day by day, toe by toe. I've caught haddock in the morning and not see him in the afternoon. And with this motion, the area would be closed and would stop the herring fleet for potentially catching their quota. The concerns why we put the cap in was to allow the fishery to prosecute the fishery so they wouldn't leave the fish in the ocean. This is definitely going to shut them down.
Go to the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor of the motion on the board? Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Rudolph with the Pew Environment Group. I'm in favor of the motion. I think that this is an important addition to the framework because it would be the only thing in the framework to potentially reduce catches of haddock. I don't think it should be the only option in the framework for the reduction of catches of haddock. But I can say that I don't think this framework should be a narrow action to the extent that it excludes consideration of strategies to reduce the catch of haddock. And we don't really know what's driving this until we look at more data. And adding options into the document to dig into the data and figure out if there's ways to separate these boats from the haddock more effectively are definitely necessary. Right now, there's nothing in the document to incentivize the reduction of catch. In fact, all the options in the document at this point do the opposite. Thank you.
Someone wishing to speak against the motion? Yes, sir.
Owen Rochford, Norpel, Donna Martis, and Nordic Explorer. I'm speaking against the motion. When we were given a 0.2% catch cap on haddock, I pointed out last June that that is absolutely ridiculous to be able to execute the herring fishery with so low a catch cap. Now, they're talking about very low observer coverages. Well, I got a letter yesterday from Bill Hoffman stating that they are over 50% dockside inspections covered in the herring fishery at the moment. And I know at the plant it's more like 80-90% where the bigger boats tend to land. So there's no danger of any bycatch getting through without it being observed, if not by observers on the boat, certainly by dockside observers. Now, last September, we saw that they had a catch cap was close to 80%. So we intentionally didn't go fishing, so much so that we could execute the herring fishery in Area 1A and 1B to the point that we never got fishing on George's. So we left 60% of the fish behind us. Now, that hurt us financially big time as a company. We can't take another financial blow like that. We will be eliminated, period, as will Cape Seafoods in Gloucester. Now, I'm just appealing to you, go easy on the sanctions. I mean, if you're going to eliminate us from where the herring are, we have nowhere left to fish. We were banned out of the Gulf of Maine on a social issue. Mind you, it was a social issue. Now you're putting more restrictions on us out in Georges in the groundfish closed areas where we have to have 100% observer coverage on the boat. We can't go to Georges with the cost of fuel and realise, oh, there's no fish here. We have to go in now to get an observer. Before we go out there, we assume we're going to be in the closed area, regardless whether we are or we aren't. We ask for an observer. We go out, check the closed area on the way to the cultivator because we will steam through it. If we don't see fish there, obviously we're not going to start fishing there. We're looking for herring before we shoot the net. That's why you see so low bycatch. Every so often we do encounter large incidences, but they're actually very few and far between. We're not trying to catch haddock. We try to avoid it as best we can, but we do know that we do encounter it. There was actually, I mean, two instances that I know of looking at the data on the website where there was over 40,000 pounds, and the other incidences were much lower. Most of them were fairly insignificant. They do occur, and for a commercial fishery to remain active, you must understand this when you're regulating. Now, to put in a 0.2% catch cap, I thought was, like, inhumane to the herring fishery to start with. And if it isn't increased to at least a 1% next summer, and like this thing basically is going to close us down from where the herring exists, regardless of the fact that we're probably going to come at most with one or two haddock encounters in that time period in that area. But if you come on the encounter early, you will not be able to execute the fishery, and you leave another 60% of herring in Area 3 behind you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else wishing to speak in favor? Mr. Libby?
Yeah, Gary Libby from Port Clyde. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not so much I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of increased observer coverage during times of high haddock encounters. I made a statement to that at the committee meeting. I think that makes sense. I just think if you're going to get haddock, you should. This gives you an incentive to change your fishing practice, like we have with our ground fish fleet, to avoid fish because we're under catch caps with our catch limits there. You have to learn how to fish different, and I know it's really difficult in this fishery, but how many, you know, you're only getting a few trips where you're going to get these fish, and if you get them, that move-along rule I thought was good, and I saw in the document where that was, you know, this was for the herring pad, I guess, but that was hard to figure out how they was going to do it. But I'm in favor of it just because it throws the other option out there of haddock avoidance. I think it should be left in and discussed. Let the PDT work through it and bring it back and talk it over. I'm not sure it's perfect, but I think it gives you another option instead of just increasing haddock catch. It gives incentives for avoidance. Thank you.
Take one more against, Mr. Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin for Lund's Fisheries. I'm strongly opposed to the motion. It seems contrary to the primary goal of the framework, which would be to allow us to catch haddock while we're herring fishing so that OY in the herring fishery can be realized. This is totally contrary to that approaching it. It doesn't make any sense. It seems spiteful to me, honestly, Mr. Cheerful 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 to me, honestly.